Welcome to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. The Michigan primary is coming up on Tuesday. Polls will be open from 7 in the morning until 8 o'clock in the evening. There are a number of local issues to be decided, a few contested local races, and one statewide ballot issue. You can find out what's on the ballot where you live by following the link on the community calendar at KeweenawReport.com. Sam Ali will anchor our coverage of the primary results Tuesday night on 97.7 The Wolf. One of those contested races is for the Republican nomination for the first U.S. House seat. Dan Beneschek is the incumbent, completing his second term. Alan Arkand is the challenger, and I'll be talking with Mr. Arkand in the second half of the program. And right now, I welcome U.S. Representative Dan Beneschek. I know this is a busy week for you, Congressman. Thank you for making time for this.
No, absolutely. My pleasure to be with you, Todd.
Let's start with something that I know is near and dear to your heart, and there has been some breaking news on this. We are recording this on Wednesday morning, and sometimes we come into a little problem with that when the show doesn't air until Sunday. But there has been movement on the veterans issues situation, the VA medical system. Where do we stand with that at this point as you and I talk here on Wednesday morning?
Well, thanks for the question. That's a good question. You know, I'm a doctor from the UP. I worked at the Iron Mountain VA for 20 years, and I'm very familiar with the process and the mismanagement that's been going on in the Veterans Administration. And this this bill that we passed in the House and we have an agreement with the Senate is going to change the VA in a big way. I think it's a good first step in getting veterans better access to care throughout the country, and especially in northern Michigan, because it affects rural veterans. The bill is going to allow veterans who live more than 40 miles from a VA facility to get a card, which will allow them to get the care at the local at any local facility they would like, and have the VA take care of it.
Yeah, that was the first thing that I noticed about that, and it's been a complaint from veterans in our area that it's a long trip down to Iron Mountain. This does affect our veterans in this area then, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The other thing was that even if you had a ability to get to a place, if you have to wait more than 30 days for an appointment, they would also get you care. And, there's a lot of good provisions for the veterans. You know, the thing that we have to do now is make sure we stay on them. You know, we've been hearing in the Veterans Committee, you know, all this mismanagement, these managers writing their own performance evaluations. Can you imagine that?
I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I know. So that, there's stuff like that. So also within the legislation is the demand for a third-party independent review of the entire VA structure so that the management has an opportunity to be reformed. There's 12 layers of management between a nurse taking care of you and the secretary of the VA. That needs to be streamlined, and we're going to have outside experts look at the management structure of the VA and make some significant streamlining of that agency, because as far as I'm concerned, they waste a lot of money that doesn't go to veterans. It goes to preserving their management. It goes to bonuses for people that write their own evaluations, and that's hopefully going to stop. We've given the secretary the ability to fire people easier and get the bad performers out of there and put a culture in the VA that demands accountability. That's what's been lacking there. They've been basically telling stories, talking about decreasing the wait list for benefits, getting that down. That's been falsified. But we basically cannot trust anything that they tell us, so we have to be sure that there's a way for the secretary to institute a culture of responsibility and accountability. So it's a good first step. We got to be sure that they, implement it properly. It's going to require continued oversight. Our committee's been working really hard on it, and we're going to have to continue to do that.
I had a representative from the Oscar Johnson Medical Center on this program several weeks ago, and we talked about some of the things that are going on, and he said that he thought that they were doing a pretty good job in Iron Mountain in terms of trying to get things under control and keeping the focus on the veterans as opposed to the focus on the employees and the management. You have a long and close association with that facility. Is that your view of what's happening there?
Well, I think we have a good relationship with the VA and Iron Mountain, and frankly, Mr. Rice, the director there is from Iron River. You know, he's not a guy that's coming in. You know, he's a longtime UP resident, and, you know, my office has a meeting with him once a month, make sure that the issues that veterans bring to me are brought to his attention. And I think that it's not so much the people at that facility, because, I mean, as working there, the nurses, the doctors, you know, they're working hard to, you know, provide good care. It's the management system, you know, the fact that, you know, the people from above are telling them to do things that they don't have any control over. So I'm very happy with the staff in the Iron Mountain VA. We're always interested in hearing from veterans that have problems so that we can address them with that local VA and to, you know, give us information so that we can, you know, address these problems at the higher level as well. So I really rely on veterans to keep me informed as to what the problems that they're having, and we've been able to address them at the local level with Mr. Rice, and address them at a higher level here in Washington or at the visiting offices. So I really depend on input to my office. So I encourage veterans to contact me if they have a problem, so we can address it.
Your opponent in this Republican primary, Mr. Arcand. I'll take a statement from his website here. He says, the problem with the VA is that it is government-run health care. Let the veterans go to their local medical providers and stimulate the local economy and not some other faraway city. No more wait lines, no more lack of doctors, and no more bonuses. Is the solution, as he suggests, just to wipe out the VA medical system and give all of our veterans essentially health insurance?
Well, you know, I think the veterans should have a choice. You know, whether to go to their local VA or to go to their local doctor. I mean, this is what this bill does. It provides for veterans that, you know, have an excessive wait time or if they're a long way from the VA, more than 40 miles, they get to have that choice. And that's the first step in making that happen. A lot of veterans tell me that they want to see the VA continue. There's some things within the VA that are veteran-specific that veterans don't want to see lost. Addressing Agent Orange, addressing post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury. A lot of the amputees' problems with prosthetics and stuff. A lot of these things are handled within the VA quite well, as long as it's done quickly. I certainly am in favor of allowing the veterans to have a choice. I think, frankly, veterans do not want to see the VA disappear. They want to see it be leaner, meaner, and more effective, but they don't really want to see the VA gone.
Congressman Dan Benishek is my guest. I'll be talking with his opponent in the Republican primary on Tuesday, Alan Arcand, in the second portion of the program. I find it interesting, as I've seen some of his statements about you, you ran for office 4 years ago as a Washington outsider. He's basically criticizing you as being a Washington insider. You've been there now for 4 years. Is it a little different to be criticized as being an insider?
Well, you know, I'm a doctor from the UP. You know, I mean, I practiced medicine for over 30 years. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm fighting Washington as best I can, right where I live. You know, I live right down in Crystal Falls. I feel myself as an outsider. We have a lot of things with this government that we need to fix. You know, the reason I ran for Congress in the first place is because I was worried about my children and grandchildren with the kind of money that they're spending in Washington. And I want to get that debt under control so that we're not saddling our children and grandchildren with billions of dollars in debt. You know, I want them to have the same opportunity that I think I had growing up. You know, I grew up, in Iron River. You know, I didn't have much. My dad was killed in the mine. I worked, all my entire life to, get whatever success I've had. And I've been able to, find a job and work in Northern Michigan. That was my goal. That's why I went to medical school. So I'm doing my best to represent those values in Washington and make sure that our kids have the same opportunity.
You've been in Washington for basically 3.5 years now. You've had a chance to see that debt up close and personal. How do we turn it around?
Well, I mean, we have been working to cut spending, and the last agreement that we've had actually cut discretionary spending by the largest amount ever. I mean, it's frustrating working with the Senate. You know, the Senate, led by Harry Reid, has been a blockade. You know, we've had over 350 bills in the House that would, cut spending, improve the economy, and, you know, where they get stopped in the Senate. So, elections have consequences. You know, I wish we could cut spending faster and more and balance the budget immediately, but the Senate and the administration we have, you know, it's a constant battle to get that under control.
We're talking huge amounts of money. What do we cut?
Well, we just need to reform some of the problems of systems. For example, Medicare and Social Security need to be reformed so that they're you know, for the long term. I mean, studies have shown that Medicare and Social Security will be bankrupt if we don't fix them. So I'm in favor of some common sense reforms that will allow those to be available not only for current seniors, but for those of us yet to be collecting Social Security.
Some of us
are
creeping close.
The other big thing, of course, is health care. You know, that's the other big issue, you know what I mean, is access to health care. You know, I've been opposed to the president's health care bill from the very beginning and been trying to repeal that or, you know, take out parts of it as much as we can because, you know, I'm concerned about patients having access to care. You know, the president's health care bill cuts reimbursement to our local hospitals by over $2 billion in my district. That's going to make it really tough for local hospitals to stay open. And many hospitals in the district are already laying people off and cutting back on services. You know, that's just wrong. You know, the president's bill that promised us that we could keep our health care, that our costs would go down, that hasn't happened. Costs have gone up. You know, people haven't had a raise in the Obama administration hardly. You know what I mean? Because the economy's not moving. You know, we need to get this health care costs under control. You know, I'm a doctor. I understand what health care is about. You know, we got good health care in this country. The problem is it costs too much. And this president and this health care bill has not lowered the cost, for the vast majority of Americans. It's increased the cost. It's making it difficult for families to make ends meet and buy groceries and gas and, make their payments. So, those are lots of issues that we need to continue to work on. And, you know, I'm happy to continue to do that.
As a doctor, what should a good health care system look like?
Well, it should contain the fact that the patient and the family and the doctor should be making the decisions in health care, not bureaucrats in Washington. You know, we need to open up the marketplace, you know, for health insurance. For example, car insurance you can buy from any one of 1,000 companies across the country. Health insurance is you've got 3 or 4 choices that are limited in the state of Michigan. You know, Blue Cross being the number, 70% of the market, you don't have much choice in your health care costs. If you had the ability to go between 1,000 companies and open up competition, that would bring down health insurance costs, number one, for your insurance. Number two is why do you have to get insurance through your employer? Why can't, as an individual, you can get the same tax breaks as employers get for providing health care? Then you could take your insurance that you like from job to job. I mean, you don't change your car insurance when you change jobs. You know what I mean? You take that with you. We should make that, easier. And then we should also encourage competition in the marketplace. I mean, what does it really cost? Is the chest x-ray in one hospital cheaper than the chest x-ray in another hospital? We don't even know what that is. And people need to be more invested in what things cost and be shopping around and get that information. Why would you want to spend, twice as much for a chest x-ray at one place or another? We need to open up that marketplace and make healthcare more a free market thing, because I think that the patient, it's their money in the long run. They should be in control of it, and they should be able to shop to get the value that they want.
I have talked with the leaders of all of the local hospitals in our area, and all of them tell me about the fantastic amounts of money that they lose each year from people who come in that they treat, who cannot pay, they don't have health insurance, they you know, they have to at least get some level of treatment. You can't just turn them away at the door. How do we push those people who are basically using the emergency room as their family doctor? How do we push them into a situation where they're at least covering some of those costs?
Well, we have to have a plan where the people realize that what the costs are. I mean, there have been several ideas as far as making a Medicare, giving them a Medicare account, and if they use it appropriately, get some sort of a reward. There's been all kinds of ideas out there, and I certainly believe we have to have a safety net for those that can't afford health care and need health care. But we don't need to take over 1/7 the economy of the nation in order to do it. And you know, I think if we allow people to be more control of their money and still allow for a safety net, we'll be much better off.
My guest is Congressman Dan Benyshek, one of the two contenders for the Republican nomination for the first U.S. House seat in the primary election coming up on Tuesday. Alan Arkand is the other, and I'll be talking with him in the second half of the program. Northern Michigan, by a lot of accounts, at least that I'm hearing, seems to be lagging behind other parts of the nation in whatever economic comeback the country is experiencing as a whole. How do we get into that game, and how do we improve our economy here?
Well, you know, the governor, Mr. Snyder, has done a good job changing the economy of Michigan. You know, Michigan was rated number 49, I think, out of 50 states in the ability to attract business. And the governor has changed that. I think we're number, you know, in the top 10 now. So that's been a huge step forward. The other thing is that we need to encourage and develop better technical and vocational education. You know, there are some jobs out there. There's about 75,000 jobs in the state of Michigan that are unfilled because people don't have the right skills. I've been working on my Voc Edge initiative, and trying to encourage people to become more aware of the opportunities for vocational education and to help develop vocational education in various communities. Now, we've been working with community colleges, with high schools, with intermediate school districts, to make students and parents aware of the opportunities that are available. So we're working to, we've provided grants. We've been able to help people apply for grants in Iron Mountain, in Escanaba. I think we got one in Marquette to be able to improve the technical education, because there are some welding jobs, there's some small manufacturing jobs that are available, and we're trying to make those opportunities for education more available. The other thing is that we need to get this economy moving. In general, the entire country is faced with a situation where, you know, people aren't getting raises. People are just happy to have a job. And we need to get this economy moving, and a lot of that is due to the administration and the excessive regulation that the federal government is putting on our businesses. As you may know, there's a mine that's been trying to open up in the Ironwood area for maybe the last decade, and getting that permitted and in operation has been held back by delays in permitting. We have a new mine in Marquette County, the Eagle Mine, which the EPA canceled a new road, Highway 595, which would have led to lots of construction jobs for the next 3 years and extend the life of the mine. We need to get the federal government into a reasonable regulatory situation where they're not killing, jobs, especially here in northern Michigan. So, those are the things that I'm working on.
There are problems across the world that you get to see close up from your spot in the U.S. House. Ukraine and the Soviet Union, Israel and Hamas are fighting it out in Gaza at this point. Governments are falling apart in Libya and Iraq and Afghanistan. Most of this is in or close to the Middle East. Other than our traditional support of Israel, what is the vested interest that anybody here in the Copper Country has in what's happening in any of those places?
Well, I think that the stability of the world is not so stable now. I mean, I think that America has sort of lost its stature as the leader in the world, frankly, due to the president. I'm not in favor of sending American troops on the ground anywhere without a declaration of war. So I don't believe in that. Okay, but I think we should be supporting governments like the Ukraine, helping them out with technical assistance, with intelligence, maybe with the weapons that they need to defend themselves. But, you know, we need to make a firm stand against, you know, aggressors like Mr. Putin. And, you know, what's happening in Syria has been a disaster. With what's happening in Israel with them being rocket attacked is bad. But I think that our foreign policy has been weak. I think we need to be, you know, firm in our support for democracy and freedom for people around the world. But I don't believe that we should put troops on the ground without a declaration of war.
Much of what we see of concern in the Middle East eventually comes down to our concern about supply and price of oil. Should we be more aggressive in terms of drilling for oil in the United States? What about this pipeline that they keep talking about from Canada, from the shale oil up there? Should that be pursued?
Listen, you know, this country, with changes in the way that in technology for extracting oil and gas, could be in an energy boom if we had the right policies in Washington. I mean, North Dakota is booming because they have good policies on the private land that exists in Dakota. We need to develop more oil here at home. That's going to decrease energy costs and provide for good-paying jobs. We just definitely need to encourage that. We need to encourage safe, reasonable regulations that encourage people to invest locally and to hire people. You know, I think with the right administration, this country would be an energy boom for the next century. And that would help things around the world as well, because we wouldn't be as dependent on foreign oil, and we'd be able to export oil to those that are being threatened by the Russians.
If you are reelected in November, what priorities would you bring to your third term?
Listen, I'm you know, my biggest priority, frankly, is eliminating the debt so that our children and grandchildren aren't, you know, growing up under high taxes, have to pay that off. To continue my work on the Veteran Affairs Committee, I've been working hard on that. That's my favorite committee, to tell you the truth. You know, having worked there, I understand what that bureaucracy is like. I know the stories that they tell, and you know, on my position as chairman of the subcommittee on health, I'm able to affect some change there. So those are probably the two biggest priorities that I'm continuing to work on, and just you know, increasing the economy as well. You know, I'm also on the Ag Committee, which you know, helps promote farm policy. Ag is the second biggest industry in Michigan, and a pretty big deal in northern Michigan as well. Not so much in the UP up by where you are, but on the eastern UP is a lot more acreage going in. This is all local jobs. I mean, a guy just put in $3 million worth of improvements in Newberry to harvest more potatoes. So Ag is a big industry. And I'm also on the Natural Resources Committee, which is a, you know, pretty big deal for northern Michigan as well. We got lots of natural resources there that we should be able to develop and provide for local jobs.
Got an email from a Facebook friend who is a Democrat who posted the schedule that Congress is going to be working over the next few weeks, and you're not going to be in Washington an awful lot. And the bottom line was critical of the amount of days that the legislature works. Do you work enough in Washington, and do you get enough credit for the time that you spend home in your district?
Well, I think that's very important to be back in the district. I'm going to be in the district for the next 5 weeks. I'm flying into Traverse City. I'm going to Sheboygan, St. Ignace, Benzie County. I mean, I'll be traveling the district for the next 5 weeks, basically.
So, takes, I mean, 5 weeks to get around this district. I mean, it's a huge
well,
district.
It's important to talk to the people, to get their input. I mean, we talk to citizens, veterans, small business owners. What are the issues that concern you? Because we're not in Washington doesn't mean we're not working it. You need to be in contact with the people of your district in order to get the sense of where they're at and represent that feeling when you get to Washington. It's very important to, you know, stop by places, talk to people, see what they have to say. How can you represent them if you don't do that?
Yeah, if you're in our neck of the woods, make sure you stop by.
Oh, I'll be up there. Don't worry.
All right. Thank you so much, Congressman. Again, I know this is a really busy week as you're going to wrap things up in Washington before you take that break, and I'm very grateful that you made time for us today.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, Todd.
Congressman Dan Benyshek, our first half of our Copper Country Today program. Michigan primary again coming up on Tuesday. Polls will be open from 7 until 8. Local issues to be decided, a few contested local races, one statewide ballot issue. Sam Ali will be anchoring our coverage of the primary results Tuesday night on 97.7 The Wolf. Dan Benyshek, my guest in the first half of the program, of course, is running for the Republican nomination for the first U.S. House seat. He is the incumbent. Alan Arkand is the challenger. And I'll be talking with Mr. Arkand in just a few minutes. You're on the second half of Copper Country Today.